I don't know. Only one person makes those decisions. My wife. I'm talking about you. Keep your post that is going to come. Somebody asked me a fascinating shayla last week. I thought I would share with you. They obviously couldn't ask me the shayla at the time that it happened because it happened on Yom Tov. It happened on Shavuos. But the principles behind that particular shayla really take place not only in Yom Tov, but take place in Shabbos as well. And it revolves around the issues of a non-Jew does melacha on Shabbos and Yom Tov, particularly if the non-Jew does it on behalf of a Jew. What are the parameters, what are the ramifications of the Jew benefiting from that melacha? The particular shayla that happened was as follows. There was a fellow who was walking somewhere, and he was a little bit lost. And again, maybe somebody noticed he was lost. Whatever it was, a car pulls up, a non-Jew, the car pulls up, and he asked the fellow, "Do you know where you're going?" And the guy said, "He didn't really know. He needed some directions." The non-Jew started to point to him and walk this way, that way, and it was getting a little bit complicated. So the fellow in the car, very nice, said, "Wait a second. I'm going to give you a hand." He pulls out a piece of paper. He writes down for him exactly what the directions are, and he hands it to the from guy. And you know, the person was like, didn't know what to do with it. So he takes the piece of paper, and the guy drives away. And then he had a shayla. He wants to know, is he allowed to look at these directions? Is he allowed to be net in effect from these directions, to benefit from the directions to get to his destination? Or would that perhaps be a violation of being net from the locha that was done by a non-Jew? And it was done specifically for... That's the background of the share. So let's see if we can learn the sugya. So there are really two different parts of the sugya that we're going to focus on. First of all, just to familiarize ourselves with the general rules of benefiting from malachas that were done by non-Jew on Shabbos or in Yom Tov. And then number two, whether this specific scenario actually falls under the category of benefiting. There's a little bit of a stretch of benefiting here. I'm not eating. I'm not consuming it in any shape or form. I'm merely was gleaning information from the malacha that was done by the non-Jew. Does that even fall into the category of being nanim malachas agoy? Let's begin the sugya, the first of the Mamre Kamos. It's a Mishnah towards the end of Masechah Shabbos, and of Chavei Zamed Aleph. Mishnah says, Nochri Shehidlik Esaner, if a non-Jew lights a candle on Shabbos, Mishtamish Lor Yisrael, a Jew is permitted to use the fire. However, in Bishvil Yisrael, Osir, but if the non-Jew turned on the light, lit the candle specifically on behalf of the Jew, even though there's no mention that the Jew told him to do this, in Bishvil Yisrael, the non-Jew, the Nochri, does it on his own, on behalf of the Jew, that's a problem. The Jew is not permitted to be net and not permitted to benefit from that light anymore. When that issur falls off, how long one has to wait, we'll see as the sugya develops. But here the Mishnah is clearly drawing a distinction between if the non-Jew is doing it on his own, but not l'tzorech ha-Yisrael, not for the specific purpose of the Jew, in contrast to if he's doing it literally, bishvil ha-Yisrael. Then the Mishnah gives us another example. Milei ma'am hashkes behemto. What if a non-Jew fills up water to feed his own animals? So he goes and he does malacha, carries the water, whatever the case may be. Mashkach or Yisrael, if there's any water that's left over, then the Jew could use it, and that would be all right. Because once again, the malacha was not done for a Jew. In Bishvil Yisrael. But if he did it for the Yisrael, even though, once again, there's no mention that Yisrael told him to do it, also that would be a problem. Then the Mishnah gives the third case. Also, Nochri Kevesh Leired Bo. What if a Jew and a non-Jew were in an area on a boat and are trying to get off the boat? That's a whole other question. How to get on and off boats on Shabbos, not for now. But the non-Jew builds a ramp. He starts to do some kind of a malacha to enable himself to get off the ramp, get off the boat. Yodach Rav Yisrael. So then the Jew is permitted to walk and use that same ramp as well. Again, the same reason, because it wasn't done for him. But if he does it specifically for the non-Jew, then that would be a problem. And then the Mishnah quotes the story that actually happened. Gamliel and the colleagues actually used the ramp that was built by the non-Jew on Shabbos, and that's okay, because it wasn't built specifically for the purpose of the Jew. The Gemara in Maseches Beitza, on the second of the Mamre Kamos, elaborates upon this halacha. The Gemara tells us, here we're talking, up to now we're talking Shabbos, and we're going to switch into the realm of Yom Tov. Amar of Papa Hilchos and Halacha is as follows. Nochri Shehei Vidora Li Yisrael B'Yom Tov. What if a non-Jew brings a gift for a Jew on Yantif. If that gift that he brought, he was talking about a gift of food, it was a type of a food that we strongly suspect that the non-Jew did a real malacha on, that he detached it from the ground on Yantif. He brings you an apple, we probably, with kotzer, probably detached the apple. Then one is not allowed to use that fruit. Not only are you not allowed to use the apple on Yantif itself, but you're not allowed to use the apple even after Yantif until enough time has elapsed that the cutting off of the apple could have taken place. That's what's called Bechteshi Yasu. So here the Rishonim explained to us that there are really two different factors going on over here. Number one, if a non-Jew brings a Jew something that was attached to the ground, that's a big problem. Forgetting about doing Malacha, that's the problem of Mukhtza. Anything that was Mechubal Akarka when Shabbos and Yantif began is automatically off limits because of Ilchas Mukhtza. That's almost like the ultimate mukta. It's so not set aside. It wasn't even detached yet. So that would be out of the question. But from the fact that Rav Papa tells us that one cannot even eat this fruit, even if the yontif is over until a certain time has elapsed, that teaches us that this is not only an issue of mukta. If it would have only been an issue of mukta, soon as yontif is over, mukta is over. The fact that the halacha declares that you're not allowed to use it until b'chdei yasu, where does that come from? But it must be that relates not to the Yisra Mukta Shabo, that relates to the Yisra Malacha Shabo. Now, why that Shia, how that Shia came about, we'll see hopefully again as the Sugi continues. So it's clear from both Sugi number one and Sugi number two that there is a problem of using something that Malacha was done to, even though the Malacha was not done by a Jew, even though the non-Jew wasn't even asked by the Jew to do it. The guy is Havi during the Yisrael. He brought him a gift. Nobody asked him to bring him a gift. The first case, he built the ramp for the Jew. Nobody asked him to do it. Nobody told him to learn on the light. If it was done with Tzarech Yisrael, it would be a problem. If it's done with Tzarech HaGoy, then it's okay. Then the Mishnah says the Feirish, that would be permissible. Sometimes it's not so clear whether something is being done with Tzarech Yisrael or whether something is being done with Tzarech HaGoy. I saw it happen to me years ago in a hotel for Shabbos. People may remember the old Homowak Hotel. It's been quite some time since it was around. This goes back a while ago. I still, before I was married, to my parents for a Shabbos there. And I was sitting in the shul on Friday night and learning. And one of the custodians came by and apparently didn't see me. And he turned off the light. And then a second later, he must have noticed me as he turned off the light. He noticed me. He said, so he called out, oh, I'm so sorry, sir. He turns the light back on again. Now I think to myself, uh-oh. Can I use that light now? Because here, the non-Jew did the melacha for me. So that's cool. Or that's called the tzorach. So that's like a ner shehidlik, with tzorach ha-Yisrael, which is also. So my initial reaction was I have to leave the room, which is in fact what I think I did at the time. They went somewhere else to go learn the lobby. But then, a little bit later, I thought about it, and I realized that's not necessarily true. Because the post can tell us that let's say a non-Jew does melacha that he's not doing it because he really likes you per se. He's doing it because it's part of his job, in a sense, to protect himself. Because if I'm going to go to the front desk and I'm going to go scream and say, that non-Jewish person came and he turned off the light when one of the guests in the hotel was studying, so he's going to get into trouble. So the fact that he turned the light on, he didn't do it because he has a great love for me. He did because he had a love for himself. He doesn't want to get screamed at by his boss. So one could argue that that's called L'tzorech HaAkom, that's called L'tzorech HaNochri, and then the Isser being Nena wouldn't apply. So something's not always so easy to tell. Whether the malacha is being done, the tzorech Yisrael or the tzorech HaGoy. But in this particular case, in the car, it was pretty obvious the Goy had nothing to gain by writing down the directions. He was only being a nice guy doing it on behalf of the Yisrael. Even though the Yisrael didn't command him to do it, that would presumably still be a potential problem. But we still have to find through it a little bit. What exactly is the problem? Why exactly did this be usher in the first place in terms of the non-Jew did it? I didn't ask him to do it. What could possibly be wrong? So if we take a look at the third of the Mamre Kavos, Rashi tells us as follows. Rashi says, "La'er masur b'chtei shi'asu, kidei shlo yahana mimeleches yomtif." The Rashi says that the reason why, in the case where the non-Jew brings fruit that was attached to the ground, why do you have to wait, not only until yomtif is over, but you have to wait until the amount of time passes that he could have done the melacha, because otherwise that smacks to being ne'ne mimeleches yomtif, or being ne'ne mimeleches shamis. You are benefiting from something that was done on Shabbos. Now, granted, it wasn't done by a Jew, but that's still called Nenem Melech Shabbos. Therefore, Chazal understood that if we let you use the apple on Yom Tov, that's for sure Nenem Melech Yom Tov, And even if we let you use the apple immediately if the yontif's over, that is also tantamount to being neneh mimelachas yontif. Therefore, the only way we can declare that you're no longer being neneh mimelachas yontif is that we can almost make believe, well, the apple could have been detached if the yontif already. The yontif ended at 8 o'clock, and now it takes about 5 minutes to cut off the apple. It's already 9 o'clock. So it's already 9 o'clock, even though the truth is this particular apple was detached at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. But since it could have been detached already after yontif, that's not called being neneh mimelachas yontif. According to Rashi, the whole Isser that we're dealing with in both the Sugin Shabbos and the Sugin Beitza are both revolving around this notion of Shelo Yahaneh Mimelechus Yomtiv. So now Rashi begins to take this a little bit further. Rashi says that, the end of the first line, Hala Achakein Mutarim. What would the halacha be after this time has elapsed, after the Chtei Shiyasu has elapsed, then everything should be permissible. Afilu Le'erev Rishonami, Afogav Delel Yomtiv Sheniu, so it comes Rashi and says, what would the din be if a non-Jew does malacha for you on the first day of Yontif, and now it's already the second night Yontif, is that called after B'chnei Shiyasu or not? That's a little bit of a tricky question, because even though it's the second day Yontif, but there was no time yet that the malacha could have been done, because Yontif went right from one day into the next day. So one could argue that you haven't yet passed the Shia, haven't yet accomplished the purpose of B'chnei Shiyasu. The Rashi says, don't worry about it. It's mutter anyway. Why? Rashi says, the man of shach is going to be okay. What's the man of shach that's going to be okay? So Rashi continues, the end of the second line, if the second day of Yontif is not really Yontif, yet only one of the days is the real Yontif. I mean, there's matters that we know the first day is the real one, but we have to go along the same way in the olden days where they didn't really know. We have to go along with that as well. We make the following calculation. If tonight is already chol, what's the problem? It's already 9 o'clock at night. I waited the time. V'im kodeshu, and if the second night is kodesh, nimza shenuchu to b'chol, then it turns out that there was no malacha done altogether because the fruit was detached on Erev Yontif. So says Rashi, that's what the din should be. That even though there is an isser of being neneh mimelachas yontif, and there's a requirement to wait b'chtei shiyasu to overcome that problem, but once you waited to yontif sheni, and you waited b'chtei shiyasu to yontif sheni, everything should be okay. So now, this is one of the most fascinating, I find to be one of the most fascinating Rashi's in Shas. Rashi continues and he says, Kein daiti note. First of all, he says, that's what I think the din is. Rashi. Every word counts for Rashi. Kein daiti note. V'yeshli rayas harbe. And I have multiple rayas. Leave out all the details of the rayas. He brings rayas from Goran Erev, any rayas from Goran Beitza. But let's skip down to the first word one is mutter. It's the fifth line in the Rashi's. Very end, the very beginning of the line, the fifth line, the first one is mutter. For lo zachiti lishol es pi Rabbeinu Yaakov b'davar zeh. Says I was never had the chance to ask my Rebbe. Rabbeinu Yaakov was one of Rashi's Rebbeim. Rashi had Rabbeinu Yaakov, Rabbeinu Yitzchak. They were Tamidim and Rabbeinu Gershom. So Rashi says I would never was zocha to ask Rabbeinu Yaakov about the shaila. Ki hayu nogim bohetivim kareinu, because our minig was always to be makel on this. Finally, never poshut. He thought it was so obvious. I never bothered to ask my Rebbe about it. But listen to this. So the Achab Peti Rasso Shal Rebbe, after his primary Rebbe, Rebbe Yaakov, passed away, Shemati as Rebbe Yitzchak Halevi, who was his other Rebbe, Shu Oyser, and Leel Matzah Yonta Sheni. He says, all of a sudden he heard that his other Rebbe held that the Shaila was also. V'chol Anshe Yiru Kamoso. And everybody else held that way also. And went in Rebbe Yitzchak's town. V'kam Halachas Gedolos Osim came. And the Baal Halachas Gedolos, that was already written by the Gaon, already written 200 years before Rashi. So lo and behold, they also prohibited it. Vedanti Lufana, this is Rashi giving you a whole story. Rashi says, I went back to my Rebbe Rabbeinu Yitzchak, and I tried to convince him, I tried to argue with him. Lo holy adover, they said, I didn't succeed. He said he couldn't get his Rebbe to change his mind. What was his Rebbe's whole raya? Because logically, Rashi is right, because the man of Shachar should be okay. Rashi says, Rabbi Yitzchak refused to back down because of the following raya, because Chazal used the Lashon B'chdei Sheyasu, B'layla Ha'ru'uya Li'asiya Ka'omar. That the Lashon B'chdei Sheyasu means you have to really, truly have the ability to do it, and if there was no moment to do it, then you didn't pass B'chdei Sheyasu. Rabbi Yitzchak turns to his youngest student, as Rashi has the Talmud now, being down in front of his Rebbe. You can see the drama unfolding. So Rashi writes, I tried to convince all the lumdas. Rabbi Yitzchak stuck to his position, because the text of the Gemara doesn't sound that way. Chneshiyasu has the connotation, like Rabbeinu Yitzchak is saying. Vani Omer, and Rashi says, still not sure. Tzarech la'amdu b'teshiyasu b'shem shema yom ha'yakodesh olay l'chol, v'teidu v'lo kamar l'erv shosheni yasu b'teshiyasu erv rishu kamar. Rashi says, no. And the fact that the Gemara doesn't say erv hasheni, the Gemara just says b'teshiyasu, he still thinks it's right. And now, Rashi is a little bit in trouble, because even though he's convinced he's right, but his Rebbe wasn't convinced he's right. Now he goes on. Now he says, oh, I found from the Rebbe's Rebbe. He said, Rebbe Gershom, the Heilig Rebbe Gershom, from the lead of Chachmei Ashkenaz, was the Rebbe of Rashi's Rebbeim, and lo and behold, he held like Rashi, like the Talmud. Rashi pushed it back a generation. But this is the best, this is the best part of the story. Gam Ata, boy like Michtav me Germais. He says, I just got a letter from Germais. I think it's Vermeis. I think it's the same place. I'm not a Bucky in 10th century German Jewish history. I think it's talking about the city of Worms. Shabolasham Adam Gadol, that an Adam Gadol arrived in town. Zokain v'yeshev v'yeshiva min Roma. Someone who was an older man who had learned in the yeshiva in Rome. Ushmai Rabbi Koinimus. I don't know anything else. I could just say Rashi heard about this Adam Gadol who came. But listen to the praise that Rashi bestows upon somebody. Ubaki b'chol ha-Talmud. Now, if your average guy would say about somebody, yeah, he's a goyin oil, he's a buck of oil, okay, give me a break. As they say, you have to be an expert to know an expert. But Rashi just gave a stamp of approval on somebody that he's a baki b'chol ha-Talmud, someone who we never heard before. Never heard before about, never after it. So who knows how many other people are walking around in the Middle Ages of Bakiyah and B'chol HaTam, you never heard of them, right? There were multiple Rebbe Klosman, it was a fairly common name, I don't know whether it was the same. That was Rebbe, I think Rebbe Amnon, Ben Rebbe Klosman, something, he's from the Klosman family. So the Klosman was a common name in the German Jewish community. So Rashi says, the hurricane, that this Rebbeinu Klonimus is Bacham Chol Talmud, said like me, but Nechel Kalein, and he argued with everybody else in town, just like I am. And that's where the Sugya ends, at least in terms. He says that this Rebbeinu Klonimus, who knew Kol Tarkula, he also posked like me, Rashi's saying, and he argued with the other Rabbanim who disagreed, but Rashi says, now I have Rebbeinu Gershom on my side, Rebbeinu Klonimus on my side. Okay. Interesting, one of the more colorful Rashi's in Shas. Anyway. Getting back to our story, what's the issue? What's the bottom? What's the lumdish issue between Rashi against his Rebbeim? Why should it then be one way or the other? The Tosfos on the fourth in Mamakomis explains what's going on. That Rashi had told us that the whole reason why you're not allowed to be nenemi lecha Shabbos and lecha Yontif is that the whole reason why you can't use the thing the guy did is because nenemi lecha Shabbos v'yontif. So the hitchar rila perish Rashi. So the fourth in Mamakomis, Tosfos questions whether that's true. Rashi said the Piresh to the Kach Bo'ina B'Chadesh Yasu Kadesh Lo Yahanim Lechaz Yomtif. Not so simple. And Tosfos asked a very, very difficult Kash against Rashi. It's difficult to understand how Rashi would respond to the Kash, or whether he would need to respond to the Kash. We'll leave it out right now. We're going to get to the punchline of the Ri. The Ri, and again, the Ri's name is also Rabbeinu Yitzchak, but this is generations later. This Rabbeinu Yitzchak we're talking about now was already a great grandson of Rashi, because the Ri, as we just spoke about the Ri this morning, in the Kol Boker, the Ri was Rabbeinu Tam's nephew. Rabbeinu Tam was a grandson of Rashi. So this is already a great grandson of Rashi, also a Rabbeinu Yitzchak, but nothing to do with the original Rabbeinu Yitzchak. So maybe it was named after him. This I can't tell you. So comes the Ri, and he says, Elavadi in the second line, middle of the second line, Elavadi ain't that Tam. The reason why you can't use the candle and the ramp and the water and the fruit that the guy brought you was not because of Hana. Elatam Shemayoma Lenachri Lech Lako. This goes back to how we started this year. Namely, we're afraid that if I let you use what the non-Jew did on its own, the next thing you do is you're going to ask the non-Jew to do it, which would be a violation of Emir Liakim. So we really have two totally different approaches. Why can't I use the light? The non-Jew turned on the light. I didn't ask him to. Why can't I use it? The Rashi says there's an independent issa called Binenem Lech Shabbos Yontif. The Ri says, well, there's nothing wrong with being nanim lecha Shabbos v'yontif. The problem is, it's a practical problem. If you let the person use the candle, perfect timing, if you let you use the candle, they use the candle and everything's touched about that. If you, If we let the Jew use the candle that was turned on by the non-Jew without instruction, next week he'll turn it on with instruction. Next week the Jew is going to tell him to do it explicitly. It's almost a gezeirah, it's like a safeguard to protect, in a sense, Amir Eliyakim. The Kum Sultan says that's the root of the issue concerning whether you have to wait till Motzoi Yom Tov Sheni or not. Says the Tosfos at the end of the second line of the fourth Mem Kamos, "Umizet Am Asur Bar Motzoi Yom Tov Achron B'Chteshi Yasu." Oh, because you have to make an incentive. I mean, if I let you use it a second after Shabbos, then next week I may ask him to do it on Shabbos, so it'll be ready a second after Shabbos. So you have to make the Jew, in a sense, not get any benefit. I don't mean yes or no. You have to make it not worth his while to ask the non-Jew. So Tosfos continues and says, "Mizat Tam Asur Bar Motzoi Yom Tov Achron B'Chteshi Yasu." Why? The Iyam Rasti Mutar Motzoi Yom Tov Rishon. If we're going to invoke Rashi's Pshat, if we're going to implement Rashi's Pshat and say that it's okay, the guy did the malach on the first day, no problem. You can use it tonight. What's going to happen next Yom Tov? Chashin Shema Yom Lenachu Yom Tov Rishon Leich Ma'avei Kedei Lechem Hem B'Sheini. The same problem of a gezeira atu Amir Eliyakim is going to exist. If we tell the fellow, listen, if you ask the guy to do it, you're not going to be able to use that for another 2.5 days. You're not going to bother doing it. But if he knows he has something to gain, so he may go ahead and do it. They may violate Amir Eliyakim in order to have something to eat on the second night of Yom Tov. That's the reason for the reason for the Rabbeinu Yitzchak originally. It's very, very complicated. Something Allah hinting, and I think it's very, very complicated. So here we have a Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos. Why is there anything wrong with using something the Goy did? Is it because it's called Nenem Imlech Shabbos Yontif, or is there a more practical reason, Gezeira Shema Yomer Lo explicitly? My Nafkamina, we have a real Nafkamina now. Does it make sense when the first day Yontif is over and the second day Yontif started? Is it okay to be master it right away? According to Rashi, yes. Because it's an Isser Hanno'ah. And how can it be Osser B'Hanno'ah? Mimon of Shachat, it's Mutter B'Hanno'ah. But according to Tosfos, you don't make a Mimon of Shachat. It's not a halachic issue. It's a practice, a Gezeirah. The Gezeirah is, if you have anything to stand to gain from it, you never know what's going to happen there. So, the starting point is, Bein Lefi Rashi, Bein Lefi Tosfos, this was a problem. When the non-Jew, on their own accord, nobody asked the non-Jew, the Jew was as surprised as we are, that the non-Jew actually took out the time to write out the directions. Nobody asked him to do it. The question is, can B'diavad, after the fact, can the Jew read those directions off and find his way to get to where he has to go to? So the second part of the shiur really is that called Hanona? Now, we usually think that enjoying something, using something, we usually think that that's like eating is considered to be using something, other kinds of anosa, goof, that's considered to be using something. Here, I'm almost just gleaning information. I'm not using the paper. I'm not eating the paper. I'm not using the paper as firewood. I'm picking up some piece of information that the non-Jew wrote onto the piece of paper. Could one argue? Right, but the problem was, but he did do a malacha. The problem is that the non-Jew did do a malacha. So he did write on the piece of paper. And now it's easier for the Jew. Much easier. He has a written piece of direction so he can find his way where he has to go to. So is that a problem or not? So maybe one could argue that according to Tosfos, it would probably still be a problem. Because according to Tosfos, whether that's called Hano or not called Hano, it's the same Zera. I mean, the fear is, any time I use something that the Goy did for me, next thing you know is I may ask him to do it. So next time when I stop for directions, I'll ask the Goy to write out the directions. That's the Gezeira. But according to Rashi, who says that the issue is being Nene, we have to stop and ask ourselves, is that really called Hano or not? Why would we think, or we shouldn't think, that that's not called Hano? So there's a fascinating discussion based on a Gemara in the fifth of the Rambam Kamos that at first glance has nothing at all to do with that topic, and we'll see how it may very, very much have impact on our discussion. The Gemara tells us that Maseches Bechor stuff from Hamid Alpha, that a wild story. I'm reviewing Mashmuel. Ma'isa b'tamidah shir Rabbi Shmuel, shir sholku zoyna achash shir nischai v'sreif for the melech, but u'motzba masayim b'chavisha u'shnayim. The Gemara is talking about basically studying a cadaver, basically talking about medical school, not literally as doctors, but the Tamida Rabbi Ishmael had access to a human body. How did they get to this body? Because there was a woman who was killed by the government. So she was killed by the Shimon Kanaka. This is irrelevant to the story. But Lamaisa, she was put to death by the government. And somehow the Tamida Rabbi Ishmael had access to this body, and they wanted to use the study. like doctor, we're trying to figure out certain things about anatomy. What did they want to do? They wanted to figure out exactly how many halachic yevarim there were in the body, and they counted and they got to the number of 252, which is not the number that we would have expected. We thought that it was 248. There was a whole discussion about what exactly was going on. Is there a discrepancy between men and women's bodies, etc.? A whole discussion to come up. But that the anatomy part is not so interesting. And it's interesting, but that's not the part of the focus of Esugya. There's a problem. There's a big problem with this Sugya. How in the world did the Talmidei Rabbi Shmuel have a right to do what they did, in a sense, study the human body? Or for that matter, what right does a person going to medical school have a right to study a human body? What's the problem? Based on the sixth of the Ma'amar Kamos, the Gemara Masechet Avodah Daf Chaf Tes Beis tells us as follows: Yayin min Melon. The Mishnah said that wine that was poured by a non-Jew to an idol is off limits. It's also Hanoam min HaTorah. You're not allowed to derive any benefit from it. Why not? How do you know? Where does it say that? Amar Rabba Avu, Amar Kra. Asher Chelev Vachema Yochelu Yishtu Yayin Nesicham. The Torah says in Parshas Hazinu, it speaks about bringing animal sacrifices to an Avodah Zarah, and it speaks about pouring wine to the Avodah Zarah. Ma Zevach Asa Banu. Just as an animal sacrifice to an idol is Asa Banu, you can't derive benefit from it. So to wine that was poured for an idol, you can't derive benefit. This is part of the reason why wine that was touched by a non-Jew is asur, because there was a concern that maybe if the non-Jew is handling the wine, you never know what he has in mind. You never know what he may do without you noticing it. That's one of the several reasons why wine handled by a non-Jew is not considered to be kosher. But here we're talking about if the wine was mamish poured to an idol, it's literally it's asur min haTorah. It's compared to what we call tikrobus of a dessert, to a sacrifice brought to an idol. Then the Gemara questions, zevach gufi minon. How do you know that the sacrifice brought to the idol itself is also banon? What does it say that in the Chumash? The dechsev, v'yitzamdul about po'or v'yochel zivchei meisim. There's a pasuk actually in Tehillim, which many of the Rishonim assume this just means it's almost like a halacha Moshe Mesinai, that the pasuk in Kisvei HaKodesh and Tehillim compares the offering of Avodah Zarah, that which they brought idols, they brought things, gifts to the Baal Po'or, is considered to be like mesim, zivchei meisim. Why is Avodah Zarah called a mace? Ma mace asabano, av zivch nami asabano. Just as a dead body is prohibited to derive benefit from, so too, a sacrifice given to an idol is prohibited to derive benefit from, and wine is compared to the sacrifice. We have a triple hekesh here. The wine is compared to the sacrifice compared to a dead body, and therefore it's also. Umeis gufe minon. How do you know that a dead body is prohibited to derive benefit from? Asa sham sham egla rufa. It's egzer shava. It says the word sham by a mace. It says the word sham by egla rufa, that special mitzvah that's done when they find a dead body and they don't know who killed it. And you have to measure in the cities. It says no pasha egla rufa. It says ksivhacha batama sham miriam. Ksivhacha ba'arpa sham is egla banachal. So it says the word sham concerning egla rufa. And Egla Rufa, we all know, is Asa Bano. Malahal is Asa Bano. Afkan Asa Bano. Nami Asa Bano. But Asa Bano, how do you know Egla Rufa is Asa Bano? I mean, do we have Yannick? Kapara Ksiba Kikachim. The Torah uses the word Kapara about Egla Rufa. And the Lashon Kapara is always a carbon type of a Lashon. So an Egla Rufa is for sure Asa Bano. The Gemara doesn't ask the next question. How do you know Kachim Asa Bano? That's what Shalom asks. But the Gemara stops now. So we have, I think, if I lost track, somewhere around a five-way comparison. But just as A equals B, B equals C, C equals D, D equals E, a very, very long transitive property, A equals G. So bottom line is Egla Rufa is like Kachim, and a mace is like an Egla Rufa, and a gift to an idol is like a mace, and wine to an idol is like a gift to an idol, and sure, everything's also by now. So in passing, the Gemara told us that a mace is also by now. In the Torah, the Gemara learned that from Sukkim, Sham Sham, the Tama Sham Miriam, Sham Egla Rufa. So comes the Chazon Ish in his Perish in Maseches Becharos. He raises the question. He says, wait a second. How in the world did the Talmidei Rabbi Yishmael study this dead body? That's a violation of being nene from Isuri Hanot. This is their Isa. What right do you have to glean information from a dead body? So the Chazon Ish has two approaches to this problem. The one approach, the Chazon Ish says, is that it was most probably a non-Jewish body. And there are many Rishonim, actually a question of the Rishonim, many Rishonim will say that the prohibition of deriving benefit from a body only applies to a Jewish body, not to a non-Jewish body, because after all, the source is from the Tamash of Miriam. Miriam was Jewish. So therefore, the whole list may not apply if it's a Goyish body. That's what there are. There's a Taisus, a Bavakam, other Rishonim who say such a thing. Not everyone agrees to that. Some Rishonim say it's not true. Rishonim say it applies to a Jewish body. Goyish body is all the same. This was actually a big, big question that was raised in the days of the Mishnah Melech. Mishnah Melech would have paid Rishon on the Rambam. It was a Sfarad in Mishnah Melech. And he was presented with the following Shaila, that I don't know exactly which year this was, I think somewhere around the 1700s, where there became a business dealing in the ancient Egyptian mummies. People were digging up the mummies, and they were selling them to these, selling to museums, whatever they were doing them exactly, and it became a way to make a little bit of money. So the question was presented to the Mishnah Melech, is a Jew permitted to be involved in any business that relates to buying and selling of mummies? What was the Shaila? Well, one of the many Shailas involved was, is that called being Nene Minameis? The answer is, yeah, so that should be a problem. If I'm buying and selling Bas B'chol, I'm buying and selling oil, I'm buying and selling a mace, that would be a problem. The question that was presented to the Mishnah Melech is that, well, maybe these mummies are not also manof. It's obviously not Jewish. Mishnah Melech writes that we know that the Jews were not, they weren't making mummies, so these were clearly, overwhelming majority were Goyish bodies. Maybe the Isra Nod doesn't apply to it. So it's back and forth and back and forth to try to see whether the Isra applies only to Jewish bodies or to Goyish bodies. The Chazanish writes that if you want to be Makil to say that the Isra doesn't apply to Goyish bodies, then it would be simple to understand this Gemara Masechet Bechoros. But there are a lot of Rishonim who don't hold that way. A lot of Rishonim say that the Isra Derais applies to Goyish bodies as well. So what would the answer to this Sugya in Bechoros about the Tamidi Rabbi Shmuel be? The Chazanish offers another explanation. The Chazanish suggests that maybe what they were doing does not constitute Hana'ah. Because all they were doing was gleaning information. All they were doing was finding out that they weren't using it. They were just studying it. They were learning something that was going to help them in their Torah and their medicine and their knowledge of the world, whatever the case may be. So comes the Chazanish and says, maybe that's not called Hana'ah. That's so indirect. It's so intangible. Maybe that's not called deriving Hana'ah from something. The Chazanish wasn't sure about that Svara. If you hold that Goyisha Mesim Mutabana, then you don't have to come on to that Svara. But if you hold that Goyisha Mesim Arasabana, then presumably you have to come on to the second suggestion, the second Svara of the Chazanish. So I thought that maybe our Shaila about here, this fellow is holding this piece of paper, which says, make a right, make a left, go 100 feet, etc. And what is he doing with the paper? He's not eating the paper. He's not smelling the paper. All he wants to do is he wants to read the paper and figure out what to do with that information. So he's gleaning information from the paper. So that's the same Shaila. So if you hold like that second Svara of the Chazanish, that's not called being Nana. It's not called being Nana. So then, at least according to Rashi, it would be okay. According to Tosfos, I'm not so sure. According to Tosfos, the Yisr of benefiting from Maisa Shabbos, from Lachat and Shabbos, wasn't so much a function of Hana, it was more a function of a Gezeira. You may come to ask him to do it again. At least according to Rashi, if you put Rashi together with that Svara of the Chazanish, maybe it would be okay. It's a possibility. There are a lot of factors flying around. We had a similar Shaila. A couple of years ago, we had one Shabbos. We noticed that the clock in the house, the battery died. So we had one, it happened to have been in the house. So the non-Jewish woman was helping out that day. She happened to be in the house, and nobody told her what to do. She went on her own. She went and she took the clock off the wall, took out the batteries, and put in a new set of batteries. And sure, now the clock was working. So I raised the question, am I allowed to tell time from that clock to Shabbos? Am I allowed to look at that clock to Shabbos? Why? Because she just didn't look for me. To put in a battery, that's like winding up a watch from scratch. According to the Chayot, that's a melacha deraisa. If a watch stops running and your mom should wind it up, the Chayot in hell, that's called makom hapatzis. You're fixing something that's broken. It's not functioning. The machlokes is apostim, if the watch is still running, maybe you can continue to keep it winding, to keep it going. But if it stopped winding, the Chayot in hell, that was a mamash shalva deraisa. Yeah, I wasn't sure. Here, she did it on her own. I didn't ask her to do it. On the other hand, if you light a candle on her own, she did it clearly for us. Unless you want to argue, she did it for herself also. So she could tell time. She probably had her own watch on. I don't know if she did it for herself. She probably did it for us. So, and she would have gotten in trouble of not doing it. No one would have asked her to do it. It's not like the person who by mistake turned off the light and now they're trying to cover for their mistake. Yeah, she went at it. Be a nice person. And she realized she could help us out. But she turned, she put the batteries in. I wasn't sure that called being nana or not. But maybe that depends on this chazanish also. That if you're here, I'm not eating the clock. I'm not smelling the clock. I'm not doing anything to the clock physically. I'm just deriving information. I'm looking at the clock. It's 2 o'clock. So now I know it's time to take a nap. I know it's up with that mincha. Whatever information I'm deriving from the clock. But maybe that's not called being nana. So I'm not sure what the difference is.
Bacon. Why have to wait to say Shiasa and also a Shabbos to pick up?
As long as they're clearly not taking for the Jews. If their whole mindset is that they know all the Jews like to come invade the bagel store right after Shabbos, so if their whole mindset is making for the Jews, that would be a problem. But assuming that that's not happening, they're just not making, and there happen to be some Jews in that much in town. But it's not a clear rope, it's not a clear indication that they're making for all the Jews. But presumably you wouldn't have to wait for the Shabbos. Okay. All right, anyway, just again, I don't know the absolute answer to the question, but sometimes just the lumbus of the sugi is interesting. Okay, we'll play it by year in terms of the next week or two into the shiur. I just don't know yet how things are going to play out, so we'll see. We'll keep everyone posted.